that it's like any other thing, like any other crime. If you walk into a court and say my pocketbook has been stolen, people are not going to look upon you with the same suspicion as they will look upon you if you say you've been raped or you've been sexually harassed. And there's no good reason for it. It's out and out discrimination. The problem is that it exists, that the discrimination exists, and our job is to educate people, to educate the courts. I believe I made a suggestion during that interview that it's really almost incumbent upon people who were as outraged about things like sexual harassment on the job to go and work with people like New York Women Against Rape and other groups. Working Women United is another group that's going to become active here in New York starting in September.
Why can't they prove it?
It's hard to prove it. It comes down to a question of it's her word against his word. She says he did it, and he says he didn't.
So I'm telling the court that she done been raped. It's very embarrassing.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's a hell of a problem. And the way I see it, the situation will improve only when we have teams of women who are acting as court watchers to go into court every time a woman gathers up her courage enough to take an issue like this to court. Because in most cases, they don't.
What about a lie detector?
Lie detectors are very often not admissible in court. They can be used to help substantiate evidence, but the findings of a lie detector test are not admissible in court. It's unfortunate, but it's true. The judicial system has not seen fit yet to believe that a lie detector test is accurate enough. They don't think that the machine works well enough so that they can rely on the evidence that you'll get from one. So in most places, a lie detector test is not admissible evidence in court. And it's, in some ways, it's too bad.
I only saw it one happen once when those two little girls said that these boys had sexually exploited them. They had it on the news. Then the next day they said they was lying.
Yeah.
Did you hear that?
No, I didn't.
I was on the news once.
When? Oh, recently?
76.
When?
76.
76. Yeah, I missed it. Okay, thank you for calling. We have another six callers backed up behind you, and we've only got about 10 minutes left, so I'd like to get to some of them before we go.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. What nice phone calls we're getting. Hello, this is WBAI. You are on the air. Hello, you're on the air. If you're listening to your radio and you left the phone ringing in another room, you better get to it right now, because otherwise I'm going to hang up on you. Too late. Hello, this is WBAI. You're on the air.
Hello. I'd like to tell you about a conversation I had with a young man that I know vaguely, who I think it throws some light on men's attitudes towards this. I said to him that he looked tired, and he said, oh yeah, my car didn't work. I had to hitch home, and some fag picked me up and made a pass at me. Those were his words. And so I brought up the subject of the California case where this woman was hitchhiking and was raped, and the judge said she should have expected it. And to my amazement, this guy I was talking to said, yeah, well, that's right. I agree with that decision. And so I just got incredibly angry and, you know, said, my God, what are you talking about? You know, that's such a double standard. And before we ended the discussion, I said, well, if she deserved it, so did you. And I think, like a man would say, well, lie back and enjoy it. And if he were a woman, he would enjoy it. I don't think that men can, like, it's not an analogous situation, because I think most men feel that there are very few opportunities for sex that they would pass up.
Mm-hmm.
But when they are, I mean, this man was not even touched.
Mm-hmm.
This man just, you know, suggested something, or verbal pass at him. There was no violence or coercion or anything like that. And this man was so outraged that this had happened to him. And I said, you know, well, now you know how women feel. Women get that all the time.
Yeah.
And I think if men try to think of how they would feel in that situation, most men feel more similarly to women in that situation than they do having a woman make a pass at them. Because it's, you know, for a straight man, it's an outrage to have a homosexual make a pass at them.
Yeah.
And also, I'd like to say that I know when things like this happen, most women feel humiliated and alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a good thing to remember that if a man does this, in all likelihood, he's done it before.
Mm-hmm.
Both, like, not just for employers, but for professors who hit on their female students.
Right.
And, you know, bribe them about their grades and things like that. Men also, I've also heard men get all bent out of shape about how they can't walk down the street without being accosted by a prostitute.
Mm.
You know, it never occurs to them, you know, how minor a problem that is.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's wonderful programming that you've been doing this weekend.
Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for listening, and thank you for appreciating it. We appreciate you just as much.
Okay.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night. Hello, this is WBAI. You're on the air.
Hello. I'd like to make a comment about the second caller.
Sure.
She said that she didn't think women bring on rape. I'd like to disagree. I think that women convey a certain passivity in a certain way, and that in itself provokes rape.
Some women do.
Some women do. I'm not saying that she necessarily did.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps she did, perhaps she didn't. In any event, I have been subjected to a great deal of sexual harassment because I've been working as a welder for years. And I've been jockeyed about by the boys, and let's see if you can do your stuff, and been subjected to quite a bit of it. And I am definitely a flyweight or a bantamweight and could not hope to clobber anyone.
Mm-hmm.
But I have dropped pieces of angle iron on people's feet.
Accidentally.
Have gone up to them and said, what are you doing, and why are you doing this to me?
Mm-hmm.
And I find that it's not the moral persuasion, because they're not really subject to moral persuasion,
mm-hmm.
what they're doing being ridiculous. But when you confront them with it as, you are attempting to do something to me, I do not want you to do this to me. You are frightening me, upsetting me, disgusting me, repelling me.
Mm-hmm.
That taking that posture frequently prevents, let us say, the kind of half rape second woman reported. And what she reported was that she immediately became victimized by her own feelings.
Yeah.
She was not able to express any of the anger,
right,
any of the hatred that she felt for being molested. I put it to you that if she had expressed it, she would have stopped him.
I think that,
but
you're right, sure.
She omitted this very crucial step, which is to say, how dare you do this to me? And what is on your mind in the first place?
Yeah.
I think that had she done that, and had hundreds of women, and I've heard hundreds of these stories,
mm-hmm.
from the casual joker in the street with the high sweetheart.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that if you convey your anger, and your distaste, and your disgust, and your disappointment, that it stops them.
You're right. The problem is that it's hard to do that because we've been trained, we've been socialized not to do that.
Well, I say, I understand the problem with the courts. That's a heavy and a thorny one.
Sure.
But what we can do on ourselves as women is to remember that our socialization contributes enormously to the possibility of rape.
Right.
Of any level, including the boyfriend, including the friendly professor. And that when the boyfriend or the friendly professor says, gee, if you want this and this, why don't you do that and that, lay back and enjoy it, that what you really have got to do, if you're going to complain at all, complain right then and there.
Yep.
And that's something that all women can do right now, right this minute. They can socialize themselves out of a pattern that invites rape by omission.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, there are some women who are eminently passive and convey that step on me.
Yeah.
But I don't think that was that second woman's problem.
Mm-mm.
I think that she is so out of touch with the feelings which she felt 15 minutes later.
Yeah.
So terrified of feeling her own feelings of insulting this man or hurting him.
Yeah.
Or telling him, you're behaving like a brute and a beast.
Yeah.
And if you're going to come and rape me, well, you better come and do it with the bells on. Because I'm not going to let you do this with kid gloves on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that will stop probably anybody except, you know, the heavy street crazies.
Yeah.
And that's something that none of the callers seem to click into.
Well, you just did.
And, well, the courts will be fixed, perhaps. This is something we can do right away.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, thank you for the program. It's very interesting.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. It is now 10:59. What I would like to do is take the calls that are now, the calls of the people who are now calling, but not take any new calls, because I don't really want to run over, and we have to do some more fundraising. So if you're calling, keep calling. And please, if you want to call, please refrain. There'll be ample opportunity later on tonight for more on-the-air discussion. But I would like to wind up this series of calls and move on to other things. Hello, this is WBAI. You're on the air.
Hi, Viv. What I want to know is how come the attorney's name who did this wasn't broadcast tonight? Is there any
slander?
Serious possibility that there would have been a slander suit if this
sure.
had gone out, you know, in this format to thousands of people?
Sure, sure. There is that risk. And
it seems like it would have been the perfect opportunity for this woman to redress her, you know, this injustice in a really, truly public forum.
Yeah.
Like the case of Yvonne Wanrow, who finally really took her case to all women and just had to ask for public support before her conviction would be reviewed.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember when I was still working with the National Organization for Women, there was a man who had been accused of raping many women. He would pick women up in singles bars and take them home and then force them to have sex with him. And New York Women Against Rape had organized a campaign against this man. They had testimony from several women. They had a photograph of him.
Mm.
They knew his name and where he lived. And at one point during their campaign to get him to stop, his picture was printed in a newspaper with his name under it, and instead of saying so and so alleged rapist of women, the word alleged was left out, and it said so and so rapist, and the upshot of it was $1 million lawsuit against NOW and New York Women Against Rape and the paper that printed it, and it was it cost a couple of $1,000s before the legal mess was untangled and
sure.
and the case was dropped. So it's not, to do that is not something that you can do lightly.
Mm.
And it's not something that, certainly it's not something that you can do unless you have a lot of money at your disposal to fight it through.
Yeah, well, the only other thing I wanted to add, sort of along the same line, is I think you hit the center of the problem right on the head when you said that it's fear of losing our jobs and being in the kind of repressed economic situation that we're in that makes this such a hard thing to fight.
Mm-hmm.
I myself work as a printer. I'm a press operator in a print shop.
Mm-hmm.
And I've received, of course, a lot of sexist comments because it's heavy work. It's work
mostly sure.
men's work. And what I found is, of course, I've had a lot of other kinds of jobs before I did that, and I received sexist comments there. But in the printer's job, there's a difference, and that is that I'm the person with the skill who's going to do the job or who's not going to do the job.
Mm-hmm.
I have the final leverage of turning around and saying, I'm going to print this. If you want me to do it, knock it off or take your work out of here.
Yeah.
And I think that's the real crux of the matter. This isn't going to be really counteracted until we have the economic leverage to, get out from under this.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for your program. It's really great.
Thank you. Thank you for calling.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This is WBAI in New York City. The time is 11:03. We're going to take a few more phone calls, and then we're going to go back to our fundraising efforts. This is WBAI. You're on the air.
Hi. I could relate to that young woman that spoke about the lawyer. And there's something that we have to remember. Each of us react differently to situations of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
I relate to it because I had an experience with a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
I won't go into the details, but it was horrendous.
And
it was frightening, and I was terrified and angry, and I couldn't do anything about it. At the time, I had an extremely jealous husband, and I would have been accused of causing it.
Yeah.
No?
Yeah.
So I could understand her frustration. I never did anything about it, but recently I was talking to a doctor that I'm very friendly and close to, and he said that a person of that nature has done that many times before. It's not an isolated instance.
Yeah.
You'll find that they'll always do that.
Yeah.
Now, and of course he had told me that I should have done something about it. But I suppose if something like that happened to me again, you know, in that severe way, I'd react to it differently.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
When it first happens, it's shocking and frightening, you know?
Yeah.
Related to her.
Yeah.
I think you're doing a great job by bringing this out in the open so that people can think of what they can do in a situation of that kind.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Good night.
Good night. Thanks for calling. This is WBAI. You're on the air.
I just was wondering, the last time you served on a jury, or do you
the last time,
get out of it? The,
no, I don't get out of it. The last time I served on a jury was last year.
No, because I've been on a couple of grand juries, and I've noticed that generally, women generally aren't called, although they could volunteer.
Well, that's changed. It used to be that women aren't called. Now the law has been changed through the efforts of women like Carol Bellamy.
Well, the law has been changed to say they don't have an automatic exemption.
That's right. So they are called. I mean, I was called. I did not volunteer. I was summoned to appear and
petit jury
did,
service.
Beg pardon?
Well, petit jury service.
Yeah.
Still, for grand juries, it's generally by volunteering.
Okay.
And women still use all kinds of excuses to get out. And it's been my experience that
a lot of you can't just lay that on women. A lot of men use all kinds of excuses to get out too.
That's true, but the fact is that if you look at the typical jury, it's not half women.
That's true, but there are also, I mean, we could go on about this all night. There are also voir dires on both sides, which enable the defense and the prosecuting attorneys to throw people off, and many, many times the defense will do their best to see to it that that women are excluded from a jury where a rape case is being tried or a case of sexual harassment is being tried.
In actual fact, that may happen. They're mistaken, because my experience has been on grand juries.
Mm-hmm.
I've never served on a petit jury, but I've served on a couple of grand juries.
Mm-hmm.
The ones who resist an indictment the most are the women.
Maybe. It may be. I do not know, but
maybe the women who typically tend to serve.
In any case, it is certainly incumbent upon us as women to get in there and serve on juries. I look forward to jury duty. I really do.
I think your listeners ought to rush down to the courthouses.
Okay.
Their counties and ask why they haven't been called if they haven't been.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye. This is WBAI. You're on the air.
Yes. I would just like to comment on the rape psychology that's prevalent in our society.
Okay.
The patriarchy men teach women that rapists are like these, like, crazy, imbecilic men.
Yeah.
Like weirdos.
Yeah.
Rape out of an incontrollable urge or like from some thwarted relationship with their mothers.
Right.
Now, that this is most obvious, like, in the case of Son of Sam, where the prick press gives him all the sympathy that he kills out of the fact that he was adopted and never got over this.
Mm-hmm.
But that this really isn't so, that all men are rapists, and that woman killers. And it doesn't matter, you know, what women's professions are. Where there are men, there's going to be rape. And we have to begin, you know, to see men for what they are and stop treating them with psychology and sympathy and begin to look for women for protection and support. And too much on the program, I've heard women being blamed for being too passive or not strong enough to ward men off. and we have to stop blaming the victim and begin to blame men and see them for what they are, and they're all woman killers.
Thank you.
Welcome.
This is WBAI. You're on the air.
How you doing? That girl got really carried away there.
Well, she was pretty angry, and I suspect rightly so.
I'm a city fireman, and I was listening to your program, and one thing that I was thinking about is that first girl, when she went into construction,
mm-hmm.
you know, when you're in an all-male outfit, you're going to get a lot of comments just by the type of job you have.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she should take that with a grain of salt, really.
Well, it wasn't just comments that she was getting. She was being harassed in such a manner as to endanger her life, because the kind of work that she was doing had her walking steel 30 stories above the ground. And when somebody starts throwing equipment at you when you're standing on a foot wide I-beam, because they don't like you because you're a woman or you're a minority man, or they don't like the way you part your hair, then it's a little different than taking things with a grain of salt. And
sure,
you know,
like in my job, for instance, if a woman got on the fire department and they, you know, met all the qualifications, I wouldn't mind working with her. But I think a lot has got to be changed as far as women's attitudes, because they always think that you know, guys are out to get them or something. I don't know.
Well, in many...
Like, woman tonight came off really angry at men.
Well, she is. I know a lot of women who are really angry at men. There are times when I have been really angry at men. It's an unfortunate result of the structure that our society has set up that keeps us locked into roles that we don't want to be in. And all we can do is work real hard to change them.
That's really true. Like one of the girls, Rachel, is saying, like, why don't we get a woman judge, or really slanted the other way, you know? You're going completely reverse. Mm-hmm. We have to hit, like, a happy medium, I think.
Well, that too will come in time, I think. Thanks, thanks for calling.
Have a good night.
You too. One more call. Here you go. This is WBAI. You're on the air.
Hi, that's radio.
Okay.
I appreciate the fact that everyone's talking about doing something about it, but I want to get back to the economics of the situation, which seems to be the crux of the whole problem.
Mm-hmm.
You touched upon the fact when you were talking to Rachel
mm-hmm.
that in that kind of position, your job, your livelihood is in jeopardy.
Mm-hmm.
And where does a woman get the financial means to prosecute, especially if she's out of a job at that point?
Right.
She was. You know, not to mention the energy required to go through the whole demoralizing issue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's what keeps a lot of women from acting.
Right. Right. And by the same token, she was working. She was going to school. There's very little possibility that she would have been able to get, for example, legal assistance.
Right. It's a catch-22.
Yeah.
There are organizations now which are working to advise and support women,
mm-hmm.
you know, like the ones that you mentioned
mm-hmm.
in these kinds of situations.
Mm-hmm.
But how about the more subtle situations, such as women who have to seek any kind of social services, you know, legal services even,
mm-hmm.
worst cases, or financial aid? You're put in a position where you're made to feel that you have to play ball, you know,
yeah.
with a man in charge because he's doing you a favor.
Right.
Now, I've experienced that, and that's, it's so prevalent. You feel so helpless.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You are, in many cases, you are helpless.
You're kind of shocked into, you know, you can't do anything.
Yeah, yeah. And you're trained to experience that shock, to be,
stunned and numbed.
Yeah.
And you don't act.
Our problem is that we learn our roles too well. We've done too good of job when we were real young of accepting the roles we were taught, and now we're having to fight against
all
that
all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Rewarded for being the good student.
Yeah. Thanks for calling.
Okay, thanks for the show.
Bye-bye. Okay, that is it. I am real glad we were able to do this. I am real glad that all the people who called. I think we've had some nice, interesting comments and discussion on the subject of sexual harassment on the job. This will not be the last that you will hear of this subject from me, I assure you. We are going to go out one more time with Pirate Jenny from the Three Penny Opera, and then Carmen Garcia and I will be back to do a little fundraising. Stay tuned.
You gentlemen can watch while I'm scrubbing the floor, and I'm scrubbing the floor while you're gawking. Maybe once you tipped me and it made you feel swell in a ratty waterfront in this ratty old hotel. But you never know to who you're talking. You never know to who you're talking. Suddenly one night, there's a scream in the night, and you yell, "What the hell did that have been?" And you see me kinda grinning while I'm scrubbing. And you say, "But she got the grin." And the ship, a black freighter, with a skull on its masthead, will be coming in. Then you gentlemen can say, "Hey girl, finish the floors, get upstairs, make the beds, earn your keep here." You toss me your tips and look out at the ships, but I'm counting your heads while I make up the beds, 'cause there's nobody gonna sleep here. Tonight none of you will sleep here. Then that night, there's a bang in the night, and you yell, "Who's that kicking up a row?" And you see me kinda staring out the window, and you say, "What she got to stare at now?" And the ship, the black freighter, turns around in the harbor, shooting guns from the bow. Then you gentlemen can wipe off the laugh from your face. Every building in town is a flat one. Your whole stinking place will be down to the ground. Only the cheap hotel standing up safe and sound. And you ask, "Why do they spare that one?" And you ask, "Why do they spare that one?" All night through with the noise and to-do, you wonder who's the person lives up there. Then you see me stepping out in the morning, looking nice with a ribbon in my hair. And the ship, the black freighter, runs the flag up its masthead, and a cheer rings the air. By noontime the dock is all swarming with men, coming off of that ghostly freighter. And they're moving in the shadows when no one can see. And they're chaining up people and bringing them to me. Asking me, kill them now or later. Asking me, kill them now or later. Noon by the clock, and so still on the dock, you can hear the foghorn miles away. In that quiet of death, I sit right now. And they'll pile up the bodies, and I'll say, "That'll burn you." And the ship, the black freighter, disappears.